Moncrief on News Talk.
Joanna Fortune joins us once again for our parenting slot. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
First question is this. Our 2.5-year-old daughter gets quite severe separation anxiety to the point we had to take her out of play school. She was there 2 days a week, but she remained upset long after we dropped her off. She's due to start another in September, but we're quite worried if she'll be okay. She also ends up waking up and having to sleep in our bed every night, which we think might be related to this. Is there anything we can do to make her more comfortable being left without us, around?
Yeah, now this is interesting because separation anxiety is actually very, very common in very young children. And 2-year-olds, you're a 2.5-year-old child. And what I would even go so far, Sean, to say that most children, just around the 15 months old, between 15 months and 3 years old, will experience some degree of separation anxiety. Mm. It tends to peak around that 18 months, 2-year-old age. And we see for most kids, not all, but for most kids, it peters out around 3. And hold that in mind, because it's so stressful as a parent. You're looking at, well, that didn't work at all. And she's going to this new place now in September. But in the life of a 2.5-year-old, September's a long way away. Mm-hmm. And a whole lot of developmental change can happen in that 6 months. So the child you're going to be putting into preschool, I imagine it is in September, is not the child who didn't manage play school a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Developmentally, they will have shifted hugely, generally speaking. So what you can do in the meantime, and hold in mind, I always think with separation anxiety, we use that title quite generically, you know, some kids are going to struggle with the point of separation, you know, saying goodbye. But we know once we leave and we're reassured by whoever we're leaving them with, they settle quickly, they're happy out, and they generally have a good day.
Yeah.
That is a different thing to a child who has separation anxiety that lingers beyond the point of separation and they continue in a high level of distress. And there's generally 3 stages to separation anxiety, especially in toddlers. You've got the protest stage, you know, where they literally want you to stay. You've got then despair. That sounds very dramatic, but you know, the despair stage where they're crying, they're withdrawing, they're in that state. And then you've got detachment where they seemingly manage, but what it is they're holding it together until they get back to you. And then you might get a rush of emotion at the point of reunification when you come back together again. It's almost like they emotionally exhale all over you then, and they have some kind of a little meltdown because they've had been that holding experience all day. I would say, again, going back to generally, most kids have outgrown this kind of behavior by 3 years old. They might continue to find the point of saying goodbye difficult, but they will generally then settle. I'm curious how long you left her in play school before deciding, look, she's too upset, we need to take her out. It could take her 4 to 6 weeks to settle. Most kids will settle quicker, but some kids do need that extra time. So I would be see how she is now over the coming months, but I would be communicating to the preschool teachers, look, we have had this experience in the past. We are hopeful and optimistic that it won't happen this time. But I do, you know, can we talk through what the plan is to help her settle? And she might need a bit of extra support. In the meantime, practice separations with her. And that could be that you just, for half an hour, you have somebody sit with her at home while you go out, go for a walk, put your phone in your pocket and ignore it.
Yeah.
And come back in half an hour, leaving her with grandparents or whoever is in your life or nearby, so that she has somebody who is familiar to her but isn't mom and dad.
Yeah.
And practicing gradually increasing bursts of that. If she can see her play school, if you can begin pointing that out, not now, but August time, if she's starting in September, and begin to introduce it. Oh, it's so exciting and you're going to be going there, pointing it out if you get to walk or drive by it, being excited about that. I'd also really focus on giving her, I'm going to say chores, but she's 2.5, so let's mini chores.
Yeah.
Okay. Little tasks that she can be responsible for, praising her for doing so, letting her practice independence. You know, just putting lids on, you know, being able to bring her own little plate or cup from one place to another, doing little tasks for herself, by herself. If you give her lots of those opportunities, she will be ready in September.
Yeah. Is that right? Because they also say about the she wakes up and she gets into their bed. Are those things related to each other?
They might be. but they might not be.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And I do see the joining dots here and saying, look, she's also struggling with that. 2.5-year-olds waking up in the middle of the night is really not unusual.
Yeah.
And when they wake up looking to get into your warm, cozy bed for a cuddle is actually quite lovely. I know that's easy for me to say. It's quite lovely if they're not kicking you all night. Yes. But actually, it is something that they're just going, because for them, once they wake up, they're like, well, I'm done with sleep.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Now, so if they get into your bed and everybody gets to continue their sleep and it's not a huge issue for you, then I would just see, again, give that 6 months, give that 12 months, and you might see a big shift with that. It's not at all unusual for a little kid to want to get into their parents' bed.
Actually, somebody's texting in. Can an adult have separation anxiety?
Absolutely. You might be looking at it more teetering into what we'd call social anxiety in adulthood. It can be separation anxiety, especially if it's chronic and prolonged and it continues. It can affect social engagements and social interactions. So we're generally talking about social anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My parents have no patience with my son. He's 6, most likely has ADHD. We're awaiting a diagnosis, but they refuse to accept any of it. This means I can't leave him with them. And when they are around me and him, they get so annoyed. I've tried explaining it, tried showing them how best to approach him when he's overactive, but nothing is working. Any advice?
Oh, I'm just so sorry that they're experiencing this, because, you know, going through an assessment process, waiting on a diagnosis is stressful enough. And what you really need is support from your support network, you know, the people in your life and your inner circle. I mean, look, the easy answer to give, and it's very complex at the same time, is psychoeducation, which is really psychological information delivered in a way that helps them to understand what ADHD is, what it means.
Yeah.
That's the best way to do it. But they would have to be open to that. You can't, like, somebody could deliver psychoeducation, but if the person opposite you has their ears closed going la, 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 there's no point. It's like having the radiator on and the window open. It won't land. They'd have to be interested in understanding him. And I suppose what I'm hearing here is nothing that says they don't love him, by the way, but actually that they don't want this to be true. So that to me says, what do they think ADHD means? And it may be a very dated, you know, misinformed understanding of what ADHD is. And I think when you're awaiting a diagnosis, if and when you get that diagnosis, you might ask for any information, any leaflets, any websites. As I Am can be very helpful with some of this as well. ADHD Ireland would be another resource to reach out to. But I just kind of, I kind of feel, no matter what comes out of this diagnosis, a 6-year-old needs patience.
So
for me, the lack of patience here is an issue regardless of the diagnosis. And I wonder if you come at this emphasizing how important it is to you and to your son that he have a relationship with them, how you'd love to explain how his wonderful brain and body work and what you know already really helps him and supports him. And you'd love to explain that to them so that we can all be working together to make sure that he's well taken care of. If they remain closed, though, to actually knowing or to understanding him, you are going to have to limit that relationship, unfortunately. And that to me would be a last resort. You know, I really think the grandparent-grandchild relationship is a really important one.
Yeah.
But that's when you have that mutual respect and openness. Now there is, and it's funny, like when I just was wondering, you know, there's a book for everything. There's quite literally a book that's called Help, My Grandchild Has ADHD. There is. And it's by Judy Kirzner. And it does have, I haven't read it, but it does have good reviews online. A lot of reviews from grandparents who say they found that really helpful at understanding what this meant. So sometimes getting a resource like that and saying, I've read that this is really helpful, it would help me if you'd read it. I wonder if you come at it in that way of how important it is that the relationship be continued and that you're looking for ways to ensure that can happen.
Yeah, I suppose it could be just a generational thing that could be. You know, all these labels.
This
put
didn't exist in my day.
Exactly.
He just needs manners and boundaries.
Yes.
You just have to tell him no.
Yeah. Gosh. I have tried to avoid technology around my kids. They're 6 and 3, but my 3-year-old was given my sister's phone to play with when she was minding them for me. I didn't realise this for quite some time, so my 3-year-old has now got this unhealthy fixation with phones. Initially, it seemed she just wanted the phone at my sister's house, but now she screams the house down when she doesn't get one of our phones. When I don't let her have mine, she throws tantrums. And my husband just gives in and lets her have his phone. How can I detach her from it?
Now, the first thing here is I, our, we, her. Like, this kid is getting so many mixed messages at 3 years old. You know, you've got the parent writing into us here saying that they have tried. But actually, and when they say no, sister is giving it, husband gives in to the screaming. Mm-hmm. If I'm that three-year-old, all I know is that if I scream loud and long enough, somebody's going to give me a phone.
Yeah.
That's actually the message I'm getting. And you have to put this in a developmental context because children this age are at that very stage of development when their job in life is to test every boundary we put down. To push against it, to try crash through it, but to test limits. And it is our job to hold those boundaries in place and teach them that screaming is not an effective form of communication or a means of getting what you want. That's not happening here.
Yeah.
So I think that's the first thing that needs to change is that you do talk to your sister and with your husband and together you agree that a three-year-old should not be having a phone. Okay.
Yeah.
And should not be playing on a phone and has lots of other options that they can be doing. So you're going to have to hold a boundary on this. You're going to have to not give her the phone, no matter how she screams. And you can empathize and say, you really want it. You're very distressed. Look at this thing over here, redirection and distraction. But you also have to ask your sister, who I'm reading between the lines, might be providing some childcare here and support, which is fantastic. So you just want to ask her not to give it either, that consistency is key. We really want to break this habit. We don't want her getting mixed messages. You have to be calm and consistent. Not just you, the individual writing in, the collective you have to be. And that's really important. But when a three-year-old screams and screams and tantrums and then you go, oh, here, have it. Now, we'll all do that sometimes. I do want to say that, Sean. Like, I mean, we all have
none
a limit.
None of us are made of metal,
Not at all. But if when it's something like a phone, also I'm interested, what does she like on the phone? I imagine it's cartoons or something.
Probably,
so, you know, if she has cartoon time on the TV and it's ring-fenced, whatever you give your three-year-old, and otherwise you're taking things that might be characters she likes playing with and you're actually playing with them on the floor or giving her things that she can colour and paint that look like that, but you're trying to take what interests her and branch it out from the phone into her play. But at 3 years old, this is the time to nip this in the bud.
Yeah. Would it be good to just hide? No, she's only three, but hide the phones and then do this. Phone's all gone.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Battery's dead, whatever you want to say. Yeah. But I think that's a good point, though, Sean, because also we have to be aware that our kids are interested in what they see us interested in. So if our kids are always, you know, when they look at us, they see us consumed with our technology, then we are teaching them this is the most important and fascinating thing in the world.
Yeah.
So of course they want it. So instead, when she looks up at you, make sure your phones are not, as best as people can manage, are not in your hand. You know, that you're using language like there is no phone, the phone is gone, the phone has no battery, whatever language you want to use, but it's not available to her is the bottom line.
My eldest son is 11 and lately he doesn't want to listen to me or his father and gets verbally aggressive with us. My son lives between our two houses as we got divorced 4 years ago. This behaviour has come out of nowhere. He has friends. He seems used to our living situation and we give him space. I have asked him on multiple occasions to help me out with the dishwasher, hanging out the clothes or setting the table. He always has an attitude or an argument with me and often it ends with him swearing at me and slamming the door. He acts the same way with his dad. We have tried talking to him together and asking what is going on. Can we help, etc.? But nothing. Please help. I don't know what to do.
Now, I mean, you did the right thing in speaking with him together and asking what's going on. It might be worth just checking in with the school. Are they aware? Has there been any change in friend group or anything like that? Just to rule that stuff out. But my gut is saying as you're going through this, there may not be a thing per se that's happening, but the thing might be puberty.
Yeah.
And
well, that's a thing.
Yeah, that's
definitely
quite
a thing. Yeah.
So, but it's not like a one-off event.
Yes.
This is now a phase of development you're entering. And it's interesting, we've just been talking about it, but those kind of so-called, and they shouldn't be, but the so-called terrible twos do quickly become the terrible 12s and 13s.
Yeah.
And door slamming, swearing, shouting is all a part of that. And in response, we're coming back to boundary setting, limit setting, and saying what is and isn't okay. So when things are calm, whenever that is, when things are calm, if you can, and ideally together. And I like that, you know, your co-parenting does allow you to have these conversations together. So have the conversation together and talk to him about body changes. I'm assuming it's not the first time he'll have heard this information from you, but it may be time that you really grow that conversation up. Because if there are changes and, you know, really kind of flashpoints in mood and tantrum and stuff that's going on for him, he could be overwhelmed and confused too about why am I like this?
Yeah.
Why did I do this? So, and it's like when you say what's wrong and he's like, nothing, I don't know. That's the truth for him.
Yeah.
But it would be nice if he could know. So if you can talk to him about puberty, about hormones, body changes, what's happening to him, and really convey that you understand how confusing such big feelings can be. So you're really coming at that with a kind of acceptance and empathy approach, but you're also clearly, but calmly, explaining he cannot shout and swear at people.
Yeah.
That includes you guys. That's not okay. But tell him what he can do. When you're feeling like everything's getting too much, you're getting frustrated with me, I may be asking you to do things you don't want to do, here are things, you're not allowed to shout or swear at me, but you can go outside, you can kick a ball, you can bounce on, if you have a trampoline or whatever it might be, we can have a nonverbal signal that isn't swearing, that you let me know, no, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want you to talk to me, I need space, I need quiet, and I'll know, okay, that means I need to leave you alone for 20 minutes and then I'll come in and check how you are. But I will respect that. So you're setting up a system with him. And I think with the chores, you know, because it is important that you keep that up, but if you're just kind of, and you know what I mean by this, if you're just casually saying, hey, will you give me a hand with this?
Mm.
No, I don't want to. I'm irritated and I'm irritable and I'm going to give you that. But if you assign set chores that are his to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're his responsibility, you may or may not want to connect that to pocket money or some kind of incentivization. I do think some chores should just be part of being in a family, is helping out and you don't get paid for them. But if you set those up in advance and those are his responsibility and you're not going to be asking him to do anything extra on top of that, that could be helpful as well. But I think you've got a child who's shifting developmental phase into that pre-adolescent puberty stage of development.
Yeah. So that'll only last a few weeks then.
Just the 4 or 5 years.
Yes, yeah. That's all. Our almost two-year-old will, without fail, throw her bowl or plate on the floor during each and every meal. I seem to spend a substantial portion of the day on all fours gathering up the mess. I've tried to explain to her not to do this, but she thinks it's funny. This makes me even more stressed. Then her sister eggs her on, laughing when she does it. I just can't seem to stop it from happening. If I try to hold the bowl, then she screams at me until I let it go. Please help me manage the situation better.
We have a theme today.
Yeah.
There is a theme of the screaming, shouting, tantruming stuff to get our needs met, and largely because it works.
Yeah.
It is effective because we will give in. I mean, look, it's this bit where you've tried to explain to her, oh, she's two. I'd say that was,
too.
You know, manage your expectations is the best way I could put that, as to how much you can reason with a two-year-old, which is very, very little.
Mm-hmm.
And it really will be. Now, when she thinks it's funny, actually, she thinks it's a game.
Yes.
You know, and she's still, you know, that object permanence we've talked about, that I see something and when I don't see it, it ceases to exist. So throwing is a really big part of that, and particularly throwing food. It's here, it's gone.
Mm.
The sister laughing. I mean, I get it. I don't know how old she is. I'm imagining she may be only a couple of years older. That's not helping. So this is all becoming a game. It's something it sounds like I'm doing multiple times a day. It's becoming a habit as well.
Yeah.
So that's the big challenge that you've got. You have to outlast the scream to make the scream less effective. I'm not sure how old the sister is, but I'm wondering, could you involve the sister in the cleanup? And that might make it less funny to her when her sibling does it. So that could be a way of approaching that. And I would consider those toddler plates, bowls that suction.
Yeah,
to the table.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, 100%.
The obvious answer.
And I did a quick look. There are plenty of options online with a range of prices. Some of the prices I didn't quite understand why they were that dear. I don't know. They must be like permanent suction things. But there's a whole lot out there. I think that's the best thing you can do as well, because then they're not holding. You're not trying to pull out of their hands.
Yeah.
It's just stuck to the table and it stays there. And it's when children...
And she may throw the food on the floor.
When children do that though, Sean, it's typically a sign that they're done with the meal.
Yeah.
It's their way of saying, all done. Done with that. And they throw it. It also, if they do it immediately when you put the food down, it can also be a sign they don't like it. Okay, and they're getting rid of it. I would be monitoring the activity levels of your two-year-old. A lot of outdoor time, even more than you think they need. A couple of hours a day, ideally. But this could also be a two-year-old who has too much energy when it comes to time to sit down and is looking for that higher release. So if you can get that in more physical, active, robust, rough and tumble play outside, a lot of running, jumping, climbing, rolling, that type of stuff, you could have a much calmer child when it comes. The key is that you keep your cool, you state your boundary, we don't throw food, they will half listen to that for you. And then you say, oh, it looks like you're done. Okay, all done. And the food is taken away.
Yeah.
And you have to be consistent with that when you approach this. But I'm curious about the activity levels. I feel that is a two-year-old with a whole lot of energy.
Joanna, thanks a million. Thank you. As ever. Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.